Blog Talk Radio.
I just love that song because it is talking about the heartbeat of wisdom and over innerstanding. When we get that heartbeat of wisdom, overstanding, innerstanding, we are going to be in such unity and oneness. And as the words to that song say, the Creator, Yahuwah, is giving us power through unity. So Soul Purpose Healing is here to empower you and to enlighten you and to bless you with truth. And you are the one who has to interpret the message from Soul Purpose Healing and take action. This is 2016. Welcome, welcome all my listeners to 2016, the number 9. Number 9 comes from adding all the numbers 2, 0, 1, 6 together. We get the number 9. And it pays to pay attention to numbers. Believe me, this year is going to be full of signs and wonders and messages from the Most High and the angels. And they're going to speak through us to us through numbers. And the number 9 says, get to work. That's basically what the angel numbers tell us about the number. The book Angel Numbers tells us about the number 9. It says, get to work. It's time to start taking action. The number 9 means you've completed all of the prerequisites to achieve your life purpose, and it's now time to get to work. So keep that before you this year as we begin a wonderful time of enlightenment and growth. I think this is the year for all of us to grow in many ways as we take action, as we make different choices about our health, about our lifestyle, about our homes. It's time to take action. And that's what this show is about. We're asking a question tonight. Should our children be allowed to play football and any other close contact sport that causes collisions with the head or the body? Should we allow our children to partake in these type of sports? Well, it comes. This show comes out of an inquiring mind that is asking that question and has been asking that question for several years now. The issue of concussions has been around since about in the public eye since about 2002. And that's when a football player by the name of Mike Webster was given an autopsy after his death at the age of 50 and discovered this brain disease called CTE. And so that brain disease brought some questions about the seriousness of collisions, continual collisions. CTE stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And what that means is over a period of time, basically the brain is damaged. Chronic means over a period of time as opposed to acute that happens once, all of a sudden. But chronic is over a period of time. We have this inflammation that is occurring in the brains of football players in particular, but also in other contact sports like boxing and even sometimes I think soccer players have experienced it. But we are asking the question whether children should be allowed to start playing this, what has become a very violent game. Now, the word concussion, really, that just means a temporary unconsciousness or confusion, head injury to the brain, bruise on the brain. But basically, a concussion can happen once in a while. It can happen to children, it can happen to adults, and it can be acute. It can happen infrequently. But when a person is constantly in collisions with their head or their body, continually creating a concussion, then that's when the scientists, and in particular Dr. Omato, who discovered CTE, has come to the conclusion that this series of collisions is what really creates CTE, not the concussion itself, but when they're ongoing, when they're chronic. That's why it's called chronic CTE. It has a chronic name in it. So this discussion has been going on a long time, and I want to play for you a discussion that went on a TV station, or it was a TV show, where these are the issues that are coming up even now. 2002 is when Mike Webster passed, and the movie chronicles his death and some of his life and what happened to him. And the discussion is ongoing. But we are now at a crucial point in the discussion where we have to protect the children. We have enough knowledge. We have enough information that tells us there is a great risk of sickness in the brain and even death for some who continually allow their brains to be moved or moving around from collisions, and it starts the youth, I think. Dr. Amalo said in an interview that he would never allow his children to play football, and he would actually sue someone who even mentions it in the school system to his children. So this is a serious issue, and that's why we're bringing it up tonight. And I want to play a recording. I want to play a recording that will give you an idea of the discussions that have been going on. If you've been kind of out of the loop on this, and you don't really know what's going on, and this is something new to you, here's a discussion. It's about 9 minutes. That goes the type of discussion that's been going on for the last over 10 years. And now with this movie, the discussion is being heightened now, because the movie is bringing out knowledge that will empower especially mothers. This is about educating mothers and fathers about what you want your children to participate in, because there's a spirit behind football, and it's a gladiator spirit. The gladiator is a man who's been trained to fight with weapons against other men in an arena. That's the old ancient definition. They trained them in the Roman arena, and they had these ancient weapons, and that's the kind of the definition of a gladiator, someone trained to fight with weapons. And those weapons were used for inflicting bodily harm or physical damage. And what we have today is a modern-day gladiator performance in the area of football. And this is a sport where they're spending billions of dollars to entertain the public. They spent, I read a report the other day, they spent $1.2 billion on a new stadium in Santa Clara, California, that will be the location for next year's Super Bowl. All this money is going into a sport that is a gladiator performance where men are using weapons, their bodies, to inflict bodily harm and physical damage. And if you haven't seen the movie, there are men who are dying because of this type of gladiator sport. So here's an example. I want you to hear an example of a discussion that went on a talk show about this issue, and it's going to bring up some of the main concerns that people have. So listen to this discussion.
Welcome back to The Point. Well, is the NFL really the no future league?
Every year, over 100,000 concussions occur in all levels of football. And 60% of these are from head-to-head collisions. In an impact lasting just 15 milliseconds, a player's head, on average, experiences almost 100 G's of force. And collisions on special teams can result in forces of up to 190 G's. In the NFL, the average speed of a head-to-head impact, the velocity of both heads combined, is 20 miles per hour, with the struck player's head decelerating 14 miles per hour. According to studies done by sports science's chief medical advisor, Dr. Basil Aish, this 15 millisecond impact is equivalent to getting smashed in the head with a sledgehammer.
That was a difficult video to watch. And, you know, concussions are often talked about when it has to do with the NFL and injuries that some of these athletes have to deal with. But the Washington Post did a survey of retired NFL players, and they found out a lot of really incredible information about the other injuries that these athletes had to deal with for the rest of their lives. So a Washington Post survey of retired NFL players found that nearly 9 in 10 report suffering from aches and pains on a daily basis, and they overwhelmingly, 91%, connect nearly all their pains to football. 9 in 10 said that they're happy they played the sport, but fewer than half would recommend their own children play it today. 9 in 10 former NFL players report suffering concussions while playing, and nearly 6 in 10 reported 3 or more. 2 in 3 who had concussions said they experienced continuing symptoms for them, and the list goes on and on. I mean, they go through a lot of, you know, physically taxing games, and as a result, they have to really pay for it for the rest of their lives. Dave, you know, what do you think about the extent of these long-term health issues? And is it really worth the trade-off? They'll make the argument that, hey, you know what, I made enough money to take care of my family, and that's just the trade-off.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not worth the trade-off, because I think the craziest number that you just said there was that less than half would tell their children to do it. Keep in mind, this is a job where these people are making millions of dollars, if not multi-millions, and at least six figures. The lowest end guys are making six figures. So when you think about that, and that they're still telling their kids not to do it, it's kind of fascinating. I think that this, unfortunately, is one of those things that is not going to go away, because even as the technology around the helmets and the padding and all that stuff advances and gets better, our athletes are still getting stronger. And as they use human growth stuff and steroids and all this other stuff, and that which will keep getting more legal, actually. I know, you know, it's getting out of the game now, but I think ultimately all of this stuff that can enhance us, especially in athletics, is going to become more mainstream over time. It's not going to balance itself out. This is just going to be, and it's our way of getting our aggression. People watch football to get their aggression out.
Yeah.
So there are going to be repercussions around the guys that are doing it.
Bread and circuses is essentially what you're saying.
Yeah.
Here, is that, you know, we have to keep the populace engaged and release all of their stress and tensions by being able to watch these, you know, men at war down on the field on the gridiron so they can fight to get out all of that. And yet there is this long-term problem that we have all helped to create for these players. Yeah, granted, they do get paid a lot of money, but I don't know that they get paid the amount of money to compensate for their lifetime of injuries. And, you know, the workmen, the journeyman players, you know, that six-figure income, I don't know if that's enough to sustain them when they have the body of a 70-year-old or a 65-year-old when they're in their late 30s, and they'll need a lifetime of medical care. And this country is not set up for that, and neither is, I don't think the players' union has any kind of protection for them,
yeah,
do they?
You know, if you think about, like, Rome and in the Colosseum, this is such a modern problem that we have, because they got it out because a guy would get mauled by a lion, so you didn't have to worry about his long-term health.
Exactly.
Or his head
killed.
Chopped off.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So, we still need that. That part of us is still human to us. But yeah, dealing with like the long-term stuff, well, back in the day, they just didn't have to think about it.
Yeah, well, in terms of compensation, rookie football players can make as little, and I say little because of the context of this conversation. Obviously, professional athletes make a lot of money, but rookie players enter the league making about $400,000 a year, and some of them don't get to the level where they're making millions of dollars. So they get so injured while they're rookies that's the payoff. I mean, you get, you know, a couple $100,000 and then your career is done because you've suffered a serious injury. Another problem that, you know, comes up often in the NFL is your contract will say, you know, if you don't play every single game, you're not going to get paid. So if you do get injured, you know, you have to tough it out and go through with it. And it's just a really bad way it's the worst way to treat your body. Peter, what are your thoughts? Like, what is an ACLU lawyer's perspective on this story?
I don't think the ACLU exactly has a position on NFL injuries. I mean, but I do think one of my concerns is not just the issue with professional NFL athletes. I mean, obviously there should be more studies and you know, transparency. Yeah, that's an ACLU issue.
Uh-huh.
About exactly how these injuries are being caused and how serious they are. But I think, you know, one of the concerns is the injuries and potential for injuries at lower levels, at the non-professional levels, like college, high school, you know, even, you know, middle school football, right?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of injuries are kids and being exposed to by their parents, their schools that are having them play these sports?
How should this impact a fan's enjoyment of the sport? Should it have an impact at all?
I mean, I think we all like to think when we're rooting for our teams that you know, we love our players. We like to think that they're being treated well, that they love the game, and that they're not going to come upon a lifetime of pain and injury as the result of our enjoyment. So I think that, you know, it is going to affect the way people watch.
But there's also a difference, though, between watching a football game and someone getting crushed, and then they're laying there because they're in. They're in padding, you know what I mean? They're in a helmet, you actually don't see them. If you watch a basketball game and like that guy Kevin Ware, who had that horrible leg injury, like you saw it so graphically because you actually physically see more of his body. And I think that also changes it. There's something that you can kind of disassociate with the football players because you can't really see them. Or the hockey players, you really never see their faces. So they get slashed or they get crushed, and it's like, it's almost like you're watching a robot or a video game or something instead of an actual person.
So is there a solution to all of this? I mean, we can't ban the NFL. We can't ban football. Americans love it so much. And I'm not even saying that we should ban it, but what should the solution be? I mean, the nature of the sport is pretty violent. I mean, that's just the way it is. They tackle each other. They jump on top of each other.
Well, I think it depends on more information. You know, as we're hearing more about these issues, you know, that I don't think anybody really even considered at any great length before these reports all came out. So that's good. I think getting the fans interested, the fans will probably be the ones to lead this conversation, because if they actually do care about the people that entertain them in professional athletics, that they will actually want to do something about that. I think that most Americans don't want people to be hurt on their behalf for entertainment. I really don't believe that when you ask them and when they think about it, they would prefer that to happen. The disassociation, you know, it makes it easier. You don't have to think about what you're doing or the consequences of the choices that you make. But given the opportunity, I think most Americans would want to be on the good side of making sure that these people have some sort of protection.
I actually don't think people care. I really don't think people care.
Look at you.
Well, I think we do. Intellectually, we all do. Nobody, if you ask the average person, do you want to see your favorite football player, you know, be a vegetable when he's 60? Of course, they're going to say no. But look at Muhammad Ali. I don't know that they've ever directly connected. I think he has Parkinson's, to being punched in the head constantly, but we still bring him out as if it's this amazing thing, but like this thing that we love watching get punched, and look what happened. So I just don't see that we're going to suddenly have this mass revelation and be like, no more football.
Well, I don't know. Maybe with more information, that is. Because, you know, we didn't have that information with Muhammad Ali during the heyday of his career. People sort of made the connection, but maybe not. And now we have that data. And as the data piles up, I think it will become an inescapable conclusion.
I think that, you know, the point that you and Peter are making about the flow of information is a very good point. I think it's important. But I will say that I agree with Dave. I'd like to believe that people would care, but people are very interested and self-absorbed. Like, they're self-interested and self-absorbed. And I know that that's a very mean thing to say, but it's the truth. I mean, the information about the concussions has been out there for a while, and nothing has changed so far. But, you know, maybe I'm being way too pessimistic and something will change.
Okay, that was a great discussion, I believe, on this whole issue around concussions and football and this gladiator spirit that trains men to harm other men. We've got to admit that if you know anything about football and coaches, that most of these coaches train these men to fight against the other team members and inflict bodily harm or physical damage. And what do the fans do when they inflict bodily harm? They cheer. They celebrate. And so we know that this is an important discussion to have, just as they brought up the top, this question, do most Americans really care what happens to players? I thought that was a great question to ask, because I think that would be a divided issue. Most Americans really don't care. They just want their team to win, and they want to be entertained. But this movie, Concussions, is one raising the consciousness and awareness of the public, of Americans, and if not the world, because the movie gives you the visual consequences of being in collision over and over again over a period of time. Now, granted, Mike Webster played for you have to admit, a longer period of time than most football players do. I think his career was something like 18 years. And so that's a little longer than average. But here's another thought about this game of football and what it's doing to the players. You cannot play football without using drugs. This has become more and more, I'm more and more aware of this. And even with my dad, who played football back in the early 50s, there were medications that were used to help them get relief from the pain. So it's very obvious, it becomes very obvious, especially in this movie, how many drugs these football players are using or being injected with to help them play the game. When a player is injured, they are taken off the field, And if there's a drug in that locker room that can help them continue to play, especially if they're a valuable player, a significant influence in the game and to help that team win, then that physician, that team physician is going to use whatever means necessary to get that man back on the field to help them win the game. It's all about winning the game. So that gladiator spirit says, do whatever you can to whatever weapon, even if it's a drug, to get that man back on the field. Now, think about this. If they're doing that in professional football, what do you think is happening in the semi-pros or on the college level? It's the same thing happening. The athletic physician, the team physician, has to make a decision as to what they can give, what legal drugs they can give that player to help his body to be numb to the pain that they're feeling from whatever injury or whatever collision that they've been involved in. So we're asking the question tonight, should we allow our children to participate in this type of activity? Do we want our children to be trained as gladiators to inflict harm or bodily harm or physical damage on another individual for the sake of winning? We are in 2016, and the idea that 2016 is equals the number 9 means we are to take action. What kind of action are we to take? Here's the question. What type of action is the universe asking us to take in 2016 by displaying the 2016 2 plus 1 plus 6 equals 9? We're going to see that for the next 365 days. What does that mean to you to take action? What are you going to take action on? That's the question I'm asking. It's not just should we let our children be trained as gladiators to inflict harm, because the higher up they get in the game, the more they're going to be trained how to inflict harm, bodily harm or physical damage. And then if you're starting, the younger a young man starts in this game, the more chances they're going to have CTE, chronic inflammation of the brain, because it's over a long period of time. As Dr. Amalu, the pathologist who discovered the CTE, as he brings out in his lectures on YouTube and in his book, he has a book titled Play Hard, Die Young. As he brings out in that book, the longer you have these collisions that shake up the head, that produce concussions, the longer period of time that you have these collisions, the more likely that child will develop CTE. So the question is, how many drugs can a body endure over just to play football, and what are the consequences? If you would like to comment or have a question, all you have to do is hit number 1, and I will open up your mic, and you can make a comment. But for me as an individual on this earth, a messenger on this earth, I've been called to shout aloud about concussions and football. I grew up with football. From the time I was a child, the energy of football was around me, because my father played 4-5 years in the NFL, before he retired. He retired just before I was born in 1954, and he began to teach in a classroom. So his journey, I have written about in my book, his book, actually called Sherman J. Howard, Football and Beyond, and it tells the story of a man who endured the concussions, maybe mildly, and who endured the injuries in that game. But he made a decision because of his injuries, and thanks to maybe a divine hand in those injuries, to give back to his community, to go back to Chicago where he was raised. He was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, But he went back to Chicago, where he had was raised from the time of 9 years old, and he decided to give back to the community, to go back, get a degree, to learn more about the teaching career. We have a lot of teachers in Chicago for some reason. I just read about a Dr. Francis who died, and she was from Chicago. She did a lot of teaching. So we have all these teachers in Chicago who contributed to the community by going into the classroom. So what are we to do now? 2016 is here. Our classroom is the whole universe because we have World Wide Web before us. And we have so many opportunities to teach a truth about, in particular today, the game of football. We have opportunities galore now to teach parents how to make wiser decisions. And if you have something you're teaching about, then please hit number one and let us know, what is it you're teaching about? My mission over this year will be to teach the public, to teach those fans about the consequences of those men out on the field playing over a long period of time, and ask themselves, do they really care about those men on the field and the injuries they're incurring and the consequences of those injuries? Because the consequences are usually long-term. Although today, if anyone has any other information, today players are dying before they're even reaching the age of 30. This is really interesting and crazy to me that we've got several, if you do a YouTube YouTube Google search on how many football players have died under the age of 30, it's astonishing. It's amazing. I was just blown away by the number of young players who are dying. I don't know all the reasons that these young men are leaving the planet, but it's kind of interesting that they play NFL football and yet their death comes before they're 30. Now, in the case of Mike Webster, he died at the age of 50, and the last few years of his life were spent in the most horrible conditions. He was pulling out his teeth and then and gluing them, putting in his teeth back in his mouth with super glue, and eating Pringles out of a can, and sleeping in his van or his truck, and then using some type of gadget to numb the pain in his body, and then using some type of chemical to stay awake at night. This movie just gives you such a visual visual presentation of consequences, the consequences of one man's decision to play this game for the 10 years or he had four Super Bowl rings, and then the consequences are that he began to lose his mind, basically. And that's the question we have. Do we start our children off playing football at a young age and create in them the desire to play at an older age and then to seek drafting by a professional football club or a team, NFL team? I had the pleasure of meeting a young man who was 30 years old. I met this young man a couple of weekends ago, and he's playing semi-pro football. That means he has a full-time job, and he plays semi-pro football on the weekend, and he doesn't get paid for this athletic adventure he's on. And yet he's in pain after every game, enough that sometimes he's taking Tylenol up to 3 days after the game. So he comes home, he tells me he goes home after a game, he's all bruised and sore, and his fingers might be cut, and you know, he plays a defense position where he's running, ramming his head into other players, ramming his shoulders into other players, and at the end of the day, he's in a lot of pain. So that means that inflammation takes over, and as Mike Webster himself says in the movie, that football is not natural. It's not a natural thing to partake in. This is from a player who was in this game for over 10 years and won 4 Super Bowls. Now, in the movie, they say that he even sold, he had to sell a few of his, or one or two of his Super Bowl rings. And then the question becomes, all the money that these players make, is it really worth it? As they said in the audio I played in the beginning, is it really worth it to earn all that money and then at the end of your life you lose your mind? This all seems a little insane for us, but why is it that so many Americans are so thrilled and enamored and involved in this sport? Now, the movie Concussion takes place in Pittsburgh. And I think it was probably the best place for this movie to take place for more than one reason. Not only was Mike Webster part of the Pittsburgh Steelers, but that town of Pittsburgh is a fanatical fan town for football. They love their football. They have the terrible towel. And as you see in this movie, the passion behind the players and the game and the big stadium. And as I said, they spend billions of dollars on football stadiums. And even in Pittsburgh, where it can be super cold, you have some of the best fans, I guess you would say, are the most passionate people in that city about football. So it makes you wonder, when you watch this movie, Concussion, about what is it about Pittsburgh that the fans are just so much more excited about this game maybe than other towns. But I think it was very appropriate it took place in Pittsburgh. Now I was married to a man who was from Pittsburgh, and believe me, he was part of that fanatic fan adventure, because he on Pittsburgh Steeler days, I could not even talk to this man. He was totally absorbed in the game when the Steelers were playing. And the gold and black was all throughout my home. And when that team did not win, there was depression in this person. So he was truly, I had the experience of truly getting to know what it was like to have a Pittsburgh Steeler fan in your household. So I'm very grateful for that. Because today, after watching that movie, and seeing the passion in the people there, and I realize it's real. It's something that's very real that I've experienced in my life. And now looking back on that and realizing that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who have this passion for a team that is performing the gladiator spirit. And the men who were observing, men who are trained to fight with the weapon of their head, their helmet, their body, to harm, to inflict bodily harm or physical damage on another person. The question again, do most Americans really care? I think after this movie, there will be more people who will wake up to the fact that maybe NFL should stand for no future league. Number one, the drugs involved are substantial. Every player who plays professional football, especially, and maybe other types of football, every player has to use some type of drug to continue to play that game. Why? Because the body, it's not natural for one, and the body becomes inflamed when you have gladiator-type behavior that is inflicting bodily harm or physical damage on another person. It's a natural response of the human body to be inflamed in that situation. So we don't think about these type of things, but that's why we're doing this show today, to bring you to an awareness of consciousness of what's really going on in the NFL arena the Gladiator Arena of NFL, and how why so many men are dying early deaths from brain damage. There's a lot to be considered at the younger level, the early stages of children's lives, as to whether those children should be taught the gladiator spirit or should be exposed to that gladiator spirit. Because even when you're watching children's games, it depends on the coach, of course. I have to give coaches some credit. Some of them are maybe more aware to not produce young children who have that gladiator spirit, but I think that's part of the game of football. That's the way it's taught early, and maybe if there's some fathers on the line who can share with us their experience on the sideline when their children are participating in this sport, that would help us. But I know for a fact, being in a family where my father was a high school football coach for years, that I watched those young men and my father's coaching, and I have to say I don't remember my father being very violent-minded or aggressive about as much as we see in the NFL, but we do have a lot of coaches who believe that it's important to train these young people with that same gladiator spirit to inflict some harm and push and shove and do physical damage. So I have a caller with their hand up from 770-256. You're on the air. Do you have a comment or question?
Yes, I do. My name is Cedric Shepherd from Atlanta, Georgia.
Cedric, welcome, welcome. How are you?
Okay. I have personal experience playing football, and I would say back in the 80s, you know, I was taught to basically hit to hurt. It wasn't anything in between it. It was just you hit them to hurt them. You want that ball. That was the main key. So football was my love. You know, I grew up bigger than everybody, so I kind of dominated early as a child. You know, it was introduced to me at the age of 8. Before that, I played in my front yard, played an old game called throw up tackle, where you throw the ball up and whoever get it, they run, and everybody else try to tackle it. That was the game. So basically, you know, growing up and playing on the defensive side, I always wanted to hit and hurt. That was my thing. I played up until the age of 14 and had a conversation with my grandfather. My grandfather told me if, you know, you didn't love the game, you don't need to play it. And my decision came, I didn't want to play it because I was taller and I was good in basketball. And, you know, I didn't really want to play offense. And that's what the high school coach was talking about with me. And I wanted to play defense. So anyway, you know, growing up, I have a 13-year-old and he started playing football at the age of 5. You know, it was first introduced to me at 8, but I wanted to introduce to him early. He took a semi-liking to it. He played it basically, I would say, because I played it. And, you know, and I was pushing it. And, you know, he played up until the age of 12. With that being said, you know, now knowing the research and knowing the discussions that are out there in the public about what's going on with the concussions. We see it on television. You know, I see it. I'm a basketball official, so I've seen kids that are officiated kids that played football. I actually officiated a kid that played football, and he lost his life. He was at Creekside High School here in Atlanta, Georgia, making a hit, and his whole spine got severed from just making a hit. You know, and I thought about, oh, that could have been me, you know, if I continued to play. It could have been anything. But my whole point is I believe that now it's basically up to the parent, because the parent is the one that's going to introduce it to the kid, mm-hmm. you know. And then it's up to the individual once, if it is introduced to the kid, it's up to the individual if they want to pursue it. you know, my take is basically, you know, if you look at the major three sports in American sports, football, basketball, and baseball, it's only two out of the three that guarantee contracts. And in football, they pay you signing bonuses. And basically that happens with quarterbacks or running backs, basically with skill positions, where they would pay you a signing bonus to where, you know, it's to the length of your contract. So say if you signed a $25 million contract and it's for 5 years, okay, if you break that down, that's $5 million a year. But they would pay, they would say, okay, I'm paying you, let's say, $7 million up front as a signing bonus. Now that $7 million is not going up to you. They're stretching that out in the life of the contract. You know, So it breaks it down to where if you get hurt and you can't get back up to what you were speaking earlier in the discussion about all the drugs and everything that's in football, and if you can't recover, then you can get cut, and that contract that you had, it's not guaranteed. So whatever you made up until that point where you got hurt and they cut you, that's all the money that you have. And then in football, you only get paid at the beginning of the season, whatever the first week, the second week is 16 weeks in the game of football. It's 16 weeks in the game of football. So with 16 weeks being said in the game of football, if you miss a game, you don't get paid. So with that being said, you know, after the 16 games, you know, we know football ends basically like it's ending today on January 3rd. These guys are not getting paid again until the beginning of the season, which starts in September. So is the risk worth the reward for what we see what's happening out here is out here. I mean, and you want to become a vegetable or basically kind of losing your mind and not being able to, you know, interact with your kids, you know, because basically you're not going to be able to interact with your kids like you want to when you're playing football because you're always on the road and you're playing. So after you're playing and if your mind is not right, how you going to interact with your kids? How you going to support them if your mind not right? So, you know, with all that being said, I just think that it's just basically up to the individual. And it has to, you know, be a conscious decision if they want to pursue, you know, this as a professional, you know, career. You know, because
here's another element that we could talk about, because you're African-American, right?
Correct.
And have you noticed that the baseball players are there seems to be, correct me if I'm wrong, fewer African Americans playing baseball, and there seem to be more playing football. Is that correct?
Well, you said more playing baseball than football?
More playing football. Fewer African Americans playing baseball.
Yes, and I'm going to give you a point. And this is something that just goes back in the culture of black people. You know, because we were enslaved in poverty, whatever you want to call it, it's in our genetic to want to prove ourselves. So within proving ourselves, playing football, what does that bring? I'm tough. I can get you. A gladiator, you know. So we want to pursue that persona because we want to show we're tough. We didn't made it. What can you do now? You know, and it goes back. It goes back deep, and so it's pushed in our community more because not only just because you know you could become a professional football player and you know and make money and this and that. It brings out that tough guy spirit. You're tough. And you have new coaches now that some are missing the point, you know, versus the new coaches that I grew up having that is about teaching you principles, structure, and all that rolls into helping you in life. And
right.
these coaches today basically want to breed this tough guy image to where, okay, you know, you tough, you know, blah, blah, this and that. We won a championship. And they don't understand championships at a youth league, those are nothing but memories. It doesn't mean a thing. I mean, you can win a Super Bowl ring. That doesn't mean a thing because you have it. If you're broke, you go pawn it and you're going to use it for money. It's mm-hmm. a memory. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. It's a game. That's why they call mm-hmm. it a game. So to my answer your question, it's the tough guy spirit that in the community, not only in the black community, in any community, whoever puts their kids in the sport of football to breed that is tough. I have a 5-year-old now, and I don't know if I'm going to introduce football to him
mm-hmm.
because of
yeah.
the simple fact. I know now, I mean, making money as a professional athlete, a football player, that's a waste. The risk
yeah,
is
well,
not
well,
worth the reward. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the reason I asked you that question about baseball and football, the difference is because I was listening to a YouTube interview with a talk show host who was African-American, and he was interviewing an African-American football, NFL football player. And the question
okay.
came up as to, why are so many African Americans in positions of high collision and not in, you know, like the quarterback position? You know, it's always been that discussion about why are there not more black quarterbacks, and not that he's that well protected anymore because he can be just as harmed as all the other. But the issue they were discussing was, why we have so many African Americans in football positions that are high collision, and those are the positions that, you know, there's like 70%. They were talking about the percentage of African Americans playing football versus mm-hmm. baseball mm-hmm. and basketball, and it was a very interesting discussion that came to a point of saying, why are there so many African Americans in football where there are 70% African Americans who are in positions that are high collision?
Well, look at it like this. Back in the Roman days, you had the I don't know if you want to say the prince or the knight, and then you
uh-huh.
had his gladiator. So
right.
basically, when you're talking about the quarterback position, that's the prince.
Yeah.
All those linemen, the defensive
mm-hmm.
linemen, those linebackers, the cornerbacks, the defensive backs, even the running back, all of those are his gladiators because they're all about protecting him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you see quarterbacks get paid higher than any other position in the game of football.
Mm-hmm. And you rarely see African Americans in that position.
Because – And this is, goes back again to the deeper than, you know, before we even thought about, is that
mm-hmm.
it goes back to that, is he smart enough?
Right.
Can he do it?
Right.
Can he handle it? It's a discussion going on right now why we don't see enough black college coaches.
mm-hmm.
But you see, and I mean, it's deeper than what we think, and it is not a racism thing, anything. It's just how things were structured before we were thought about, and it's still going on today in different ways, you know. And
right,
I mean, basically,
right.
you know, basically, you know, it's again, it's up to the individual if you want to pursue this as a career. If you think this is worth, you know, like I say, you're not gonna play it more than 10 years. You know, if that. So if you play at least 10 years, after that, if you come in the game at 24 and you get out at 34, you're still a young man.
Right.
So what are you gonna do now? And you've been doing hits, and you've had 12 concussions, and I mean, we have to understand, you know, genetics and science, that's real. If you have 12 concussions, that's going to affect you later on. It's just no way it's not going to. I think
there are a lot of players who are even who were ignorant of that fact. Now that they've sued the NFL and a lot of information came out in that suit to prove that concussions are damaging or the collisions are damaging, you've got a lot more players who are well-informed and educated about the risks and the consequences of playing this game. But then you have someone like Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, who died yesterday, I think, for 80 years. Mm-hmm. For a long period of time, this woman who's from Chicago, her main message was teaching people about being aware of the racist system that we live in, the white supremacist racist system. That was her teaching for over probably 70 years. This woman taught that message. And so she died yesterday, and now I'm reviewing a lot of her YouTube teachings. And that was her, I mean, till up to 3 months ago, she was still teaching us about being aware of the system of racism, not necessarily pointing to individuals, but the system of racism and how it works. She taught about that for so long, and now that she's gone, we need to take it to heart and consider, for instance, that many African Americans come from a poor community, and they see football as a way of earning lots of money and getting the big car and the big house. But now, because of her death, we got to rethink everything. We have to rethink our decisions and the traditions that we've been practicing, like football.
Yeah, I mean, you hit a great point, because it's in every sport, at least. I would say not every sport, but I would say at least basketball and football. If you look at it, you don't see in the community these guys going to be agents, to be general managers, to be presidents to deal with the sports marketing, to all the different aspects that helps to keep these professional teams in light. And in football, it's even more, gratifying to really be in a coaching staff. I'm going to tell you a story about, I don't know if you know about, do your research on Thomas Dimitroff, okay? Thomas Dimitroff currently is the general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, okay? Thomas Dimitroff was a groundsman for the Cleveland Browns back in 1994. Bill Belichick took over the team. He was a groundsman in 1991. When Bill Belichick took over the team in 92, Bill Belichick would have meetings late at night, and while they're cleaning the field, Thomas Dimitroff would go in there and ask, could he sit in? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The story is so compelling because he would keep going in after he would do his duties on the grounds to make sure the field is cool, and go up there and learn whatever they did. Play youth football, that's all he did. This man has been a general manager for the Falcons. He's making just as much money as these guys he's making more money than these guys on the field that's busting their head every Sunday and getting times that they won't have probably when they're 65 to understand where they are because of a game that they played maybe for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you give it up 10 years of your life. When you have somebody like Thomas Dimitroff that didn't even really play the game, that's basically a general manager, and he's picking players, drafting players that are on that field, but they're risking basically their lives while he's up in the suites watching them and judging them to see if he's going to keep them next week or he's going to cut it.
Right.
So why don't we have, our community building that and pushing that? Because that right there will last you where you're not hurt, you ain't taking no medicine, you're not having to worry about no pills, no concussions, because you're in the suite booth every day making major decisions. That's what we need to push.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But again, like Dr. Francis said, it's a system racism to where you're not the mindset is not even thinking to go that high.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking, I'm good enough just to be on the field or on the court. Mm-hmm. It's still modern-day slavery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just being honest with you. I was a play ball. I played against a lot of guys that played in the NBA. I've refereed guys in the NBA. I've refereed NBA guys. I tell you this, those guys don't understand they're risking their knees. So when they're 60, 70 years old, it's hard for them to get up and walk. It's hard for them to even, some of them in the wheelchair. Those different things, you're still risking your body, even though you're jumping up, dunking, and all this and that. The whole part about it is you got to get to a stage like a Grant Hill. Grant Hill had, and my aunt had experience with Grant Hill's wife, so Grant Hill had 6 surgeries on his ankle. And, you know, and with that being said, he played the game, but Grant Hill was smart enough to know, and I think that's breeded from his family and his upbringing, to know it's a bigger plan. So I can risk it. I can play moderately, but I'm not going to put my all into it because I know what I'm risking on my health. He's still going to feel it because he did it for the love of the game. But my whole point is that Grant Hill now is a minority owner of the Atlanta Hawks. And that's
what
we need to breed more of. If you're going to be a player, transfer to that type of game. I think it's happening more in basketball, but in football, it's still a blockage. It's still a blockage where, you know, you're not going to see that many black coaches in the NFL. You know, and that's something, you know, it is what it is. You know, but you see. You see more black players out there than any other type of race out there, and that's just the way it is. So, you just like officiating, you know, you see more athletes out there that, you know, might be, you know, African American, but you see more Caucasian officials. That's just not race. It's not nothing racism. It's the system. It's the system.
Yeah.
So you know, it's bigger, you know, to me, it's bigger than what we're really trying to make, you know, these kids see what football is all about, you know, what sports is all about, because you're only going to play sports probably 10 to 15 years at best. Any professional sport, baseball, you can play 20 years. That's another story. But we're really concentrating on football. That can be 5 to 10 years, honestly. So is the risk worth the reward? That's just the bottom line, you know.
Right, and one part of the discussion these two guys were having, one of the NFL player was saying that you feel like you're on a slave block when I don't know if this is true, but when they're choosing the football players, do they have them lined up and in short, wearing shorts and checking out their physique and their muscles and determining if they're physically fit when they're being chosen for the draft?
Oh, yes. I mean, they have to go through all types of the combine. That's what the combine is for. And then once they go through the combine, they have to do IQ tests. You know, they have a test for the quarterback. That's a strenuous test. It's like a test, basically judging your IQ, you know, and they ask you several different type of questions. So, you know, I mean, and you know, they go through the NFL combine, and they have the pro day in college, and then, you know, they go from there. So it's real strenuous, you know. And, I mean, the whole thing about it is, you know, the effort, what you have to put into making it to really be successful in that sport, unless you're a skilled position, and I mean quarterback, running back, wide receiver, I would say defensive back. If you're not one of those type of positions, the rest of positions, to me, is not worth it. You're not worth it because you're steadily making contact. You're steadily making contact. Those the defensive backs make contact if it's mostly open field tackles. They're not making. They're basically covering the receivers. But other than that, the defensive linemen, the offensive linemen and the defensive linemen and the linebackers, it's not worth the risk. And even the tight end. And that's what made me want to stop playing football, because they were trying to make me be a tight end. And I didn't want to be hit in the knees. I was 6'4". I didn't want to get hit in the knees and have ACL injuries. And I didn't want that. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to go through that, you know. So
right. It
is what it is. But, I mean, is this not worth the reward?
Yeah, thank you. There's a really good book I read about maybe 5-6 years ago called The $40 Million Slave. Mm-hmm. Written by William Roden. Bill Roden, he's a New York Times sports writer, and he actually played for my dad at Harlan High School. That's one of the examples. He's a really good sports writer. And he writes this book, $40 Million Slave. If you read this book, it really opens your eyes to the psyche involved in playing these sports where they're paying them millions of dollars, and yet basically they're just slaves, because, as you just pointed out, most of the owners, most of the people in the higher positions are not African American, and they treat them like slaves. So Bill Roden, to me, is an example of what the type of men, African American men, that can be trained and educated when they have someone like my dad take a step out of football, professional ball, and teach these youth. That we have such a need in the black community for mentors.
Yeah.
And my prayer is that these professional football players will wake up, realize the risk and consequences of having your head bashed around and collisions over a period of time that will damage your brain, that they're going to wake up, especially from this movie, they're going to wake up and say, what we have a need for in 2016 is more mentors in the black community. We have more violence, more deaths and shootings in the black community, black-on-black crime, and all we hear about is the white-on-black crime. When the policeman shoots an African-American, it makes front-page news, it's on the radio, TV news, and we hardly ever hear about the black-on-black crime, yet most of us are totally aware that it's going on, especially in Chicago. He didn't make that movie Chirac for nothing. So it's like Iraq in the urban areas. So this show is meant to raise the consciousness of every parent out there, especially like you, Cedric, to teach your children about this game of football. There's a great scene in the movie Concussion where Dr. Amalu has a jar with something representing the brain in it sitting in water, and as he shakes the jar, demonstrating what happens when the head is moved around and collides with men all the time, it turns to mush.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the visual scenes that we need to teach our children about what happens, what the consequences are if they were to choose to play this gladiator-type sport where men are trained to inflict bodily harm or physical damage on other men. So this is an important time or year to wake up, especially our parents, and share this with your friends and neighbors, that maybe it's time for the NFL to stand for No Future League. If they're going to continue to train these men the way they've been training them and to inject drugs in them throughout the game that create these drug addicts. Just about every retired player that you watch on YouTube talks about how they're addicted to pain medications, from oxycodone to all the other 4 or 5 different drugs they've been administered while they're playing the game. This is every retired player who plays for a long period of time and who continually allows their body to be inflamed game after game after game, and allowing these slave owners to inject the drugs into them so they can continue to win the games for them. And it's by choice. Just as you said, when we get enough information, then you give that adult the choice. You give them enough information, and tell them what's really going on, then it's their choice. But we want to at least encourage people to do the research, gain the knowledge, and get more information, get enough information. And this movie will help do that. That's why I'm promoting the movie Concussion, because it's so full of knowledge that will help every man and woman out there make the right decision, whether it's for their child or for their own future career, that this is not the way you want to live your life, inflicting harm on others and risking brain damage and being on addicted to pain medication for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of it. So thank you for sharing, Cedric, and we know that we will probably not see your children on the football field in the future.
No, I don't think we may be leaning that way. My wife definitely is not a fan of it, you know, at all, period. And I don't think really with the head concussions and everything that's out here, you know, I don't think it. My son is not really a big, big fan of it. I'm a basketball guy, so I would push basketball more than anything. But
And we want to push athletics for sure. Swimming, let's try swimming. That seems pretty safe.
Swimming too, yeah. Swimming too, no, definitely swimming, you know. I mean, for my daughter too, she's, you know, so I definitely you know, it's other aspects, soccer, you know, my son, he plays soccer, my daughter's played soccer, you know, baseball, you know, I mean, even track, you know, that's something that I'm going to introduce my five-year-old to, you know, I didn't run
tennis?
Track.
Tennis? So, how about some tennis, so hitting some tennis balls?
Tennis, too, for my, tennis for my daughter and my son, too. So, you know, those different, you know, there are a lot of different sports. Golf is another sport, you know. So, you know, I just, it, to me, playing different sports is not really about, I've learned from my personal experience, it's not about making it professional. It's learning the experiences that you had and the camaraderie that you had with others and the wins and the losses and, you know, the experiences that you had, the ups and that, all those different things, that's life. And that's what sports taught me. And I think that's what really sports is all about. It's not about making it as a professional athlete, you know. And I think if people really look at sports about teaching and putting your child in different sports, because it teaches your child a focus. You know, one thing about sports, every day you get in sports, if you play football, you're going to come to practice, you got to put on your equipment. All these things is a structure. So just like if you go to a job, if you go to that job, you know what your duties are. So your duties going to football. Before you go to practice, you get out your car, you go into the facility, you get out there, you get your undress, you get your equipment on, you make sure everything is out. You get out there, you stretch, you go ahead and stretch, you all do drills. You do drills for a certain time. The next thing you know, you all maybe do going over different plays or whatever. Now you're scrimmaging.
Hey, Cookie.
That's right. It would be great if coaches emphasized that those life principles more than inflicting bodily harm or physical damage. But that's not quite the reality yet. But this is 2016, as I said in the beginning, the number 9 means action, taking action. And I think all of us have to be mindful of that. If we don't take action in the direction of balancing our spirit with the Creator's love, compassion, wisdom, and understanding, then we're going to suffer and we're not going to succeed and we're going to see death. This is the reality we're all waking up to. The Creator is in the cosmos and the universe are inspiring and encouraging us to walk in love, compassion, wisdom, and over understanding the human body. And that's what, you know, this movie Concussion is a great, great lesson about understanding the human body, and especially the brain. And that's why it's a great movie to see this year, beginning of the year, and to keep it before you all year long, that we need to have more respect for the unique characteristics of the human brain and what it can and cannot withstand as we go through our journey in life. And it just as I said, there's going to be a death of all things, all systems that are not willing to get in line with love, compassion, and wisdom. And the NFL will become the No Future League. It, mark my word, if they don't want to get in line with a change in playing that sport. And you have just expressed it very well, Cedric, about all your experience with it. And it's time we introduce our children to other sports that are not of the gladiator, kill them or bring harm to the body, spirit. And so I'm trusting that you and all my listeners will begin today to think more about teaching children how to play sports that are not designed to inflict bodily harm, but are more designed to demonstrate the gift of muscles and willpower and discipline and all the great individual characteristics that we can display when we play any type of sport. So if you have any comments or questions, now's the time. Raise your hand. We only have a few minutes left. And again, this show is all about helping us raise children, conscious children. We have so many beautiful children on the earth, and I know Cedric has three beautiful children he's responsible for, and I'm certainly glad that he is one conscious parent, and we need to help other conscious, we need to help other parents become conscious. Even those of us who don't have children, I don't have any small children, I have one grandchildren, and believe me, every opportunity that I have to be with that child or my nieces and nephews, I make a conscious effort to give them, show them love and compassion, because they're not always going to get it when they leave home. So it's very important to give it to them before they leave home, the love and the compassion and the patience. Show them those sports that are not violent and inflicting, but help them develop the integrity and the wisdom that my father, Sherman J. Howard, demonstrates. And my book is out, Sherman J. Howard, Football and Beyond, which tells you, would give, gives you the biography of one man who made a difference in thousands of young people's lives because he stopped playing football, pro football, and dedicated his life to teaching principles to other young men and women. And today we have thousands of successful young men and women who are disciplined and have high integrity because of this one man. So let's follow his example and do the same for our children, and encourage others to do the same. So thank you all for listening tonight, and I hope this show has been a blessing. And I'm going to play my favorite song again, Heartbeat by Becca Shea. It's the heartbeat of wisdom and understanding. She sings about Yeshua, bring us together, and Yeshua is the Hebrew word that means wisdom and understanding. And she says that the Most High, the King of the universe, is bringing us power through unity. So let us all be unified in this one area of sports and go forward encouraging parents to shift their focus from football and its violence to other sports that develop the love, compassion, strength, discipline, and integrity that our Creator has given us to heal this earth and to bring more energy of empowerment to every single individual. So, again, thank you and shalom. And here is Heartbeat, the heartbeat of our Creator. This is moving to the earth in 2016. Love, compassion, wisdom.
And heads, let us ransom people for God. Hey. From every tribe and language, people, every nation. Hey. Where warriors have fallen, there's a resurrection coming.
It is your time to rise and shine.
Oh, wake up, you sleeping giant.
The wounds of injustice are being healed by the peace.
Hey. Oh, Yahweh is bringing us power through unity.
Hey.
Where warriors have fallen, there's a resurrection coming.
together. We